Welcome to Virtual School Assembly. I'm your host, Tyler Christensen. I'm a productivity speaker, author, and classroom teacher. Here at Virtual School Assembly, I interview Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, Olympians, speakers, and educators who share messages of inspiration, education, and hope to better prepare you for an ever-changing and uncertain world. Thanks for joining us. Let's get started. Welcome back to Virtual School Assembly. Today our guest is Brad Kohler. Brad is a former professional mixed martial artist, an author, an inventor, and a business owner. He owns the distinction of being a three-time MMA world champion. He was a high school state champion in Ohio, finished third in the 1996 Olympic trials, and is a two-time UFC veteran. Since his professional fighting career, he started his own business as the inventor of the combo hitter. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Thanks, Todd. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. That's quite the list of accolades. I mean, most people, you were a professional athlete or you were an author or, you know, but you've kind of done everything. So I'm excited to dig into that. That's an awesome story.
You know, I guess it's, you know, a lot of things that come to mind when I remember growing up is, you know, someone constantly telling me what I couldn't do.
Right.
So I wanted to make a point to show what I can do. And that's what I focused on, the things that I could do. And I'm not a very tall guy. I'm not the best athlete. But, you know, I'm a very hard worker. I'm very disciplined. And I'm very goal-oriented. So to me, it's like, you know, if you limit yourself, okay, then you've listened to others.
Right.
So I don't think there's anything you can't do, no matter who you are. And it really just – What's the worst that could happen? You fail? I mean, okay, that's great. Failing's actually good for you.
Right.
You know, it builds character, builds strength, it educates you. So it's actually a good thing to go out there and try things, you know. And, you know, so you know what they say about you know it's okay to fail because then you've tried. So that's I guess what I've always done. So I've failed a lot in my life too. Those highlights there were, you know, in not behind the scenes.
Right. So. Well, and I think that's a good place for us to start then is, you know, you've accomplished a lot of your goals throughout your life, but it all starts back in Ohio with your childhood. So tell us a little bit about your origin story. Where are you from? What was your childhood like?
Well, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I had an older brother that I was fairly close with, and then younger siblings that I was not very close with. I mean, you know, it was lower middle class home. My parents were alcoholics, you know, very abusive, and it was a difference. Now, this is just my story. There's a lot of kids out there that I say, listen, there are worse stories out there.
Sure.
And the thing is some of these worst stories out there, I mean, have great endings. It's about, you know, that building that character. And I don't regret any of it. I don't suffer from it. You know, my father was very, very physically abusive to me. My mother was the torture expert, whether burning me or beating me with a wire or a belt. But my father was constantly the one who would come home and look for me to beat me up almost nightly. And, so, you know, growing up, I was, you know, constantly, and there was a reason for that. There was the misconception that I was illegitimate. There was, although I look exactly like my father, my older brother looks nothing like the rest of us, but hey, we won't go there, okay? But I mean, but you know, it's like, you know, so there was a lot of resentment towards mm-hmm. me, and you could tell there was, you know, how you can hate a kid is, I don't know, but I have my own children and I couldn't even fathom that, let alone ever hitting them. But, so it was a lot of that. It was a lot of stress growing up, being afraid to sleep because you'd come in drunk and just start hitting on me, whether it was a fist or a crowbar or a 2x4. I've been hit with everything that you've seen in pro wrestling. Okay.
Wow.
So, there was no pulled punches here. So, you know, and then, you know, I just decided one day, you know, I wanted to start getting stronger. Now, my uncle, who was a big influence in my life, He was a Greco-Roman wrestler, was a special forces military. And although he could have destroyed my dad, my mother, of course, prevented that from happening. And so my uncle kind of took me under his wing. So I spent a lot of summers with my uncle, who was my mentor, and more of a father to me than my real father ever was. So he got me lifting weights, going in the positive direction, you know, not listening to negative processing with people telling me you'll never be nothing, you'll be a bum, blah, blah, blah. And went through that. And eventually, when I did get big enough to defend myself, my mother was actually getting beat up one day. And I stopped him from hitting her, and he ended up shooting me point blank in the chest. So he shot me point blank in my sternum. Now, it knocked me down, knocked me out, but the bullet, although it cracked my sternum and there's still a hole, bounced off. It was point blank. It was a 25 caliber. It was, you know, one of those miracle moments, I guess you want to call it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in the hospital about 3 days, and I was a kid, 16 years old, and I said, yeah, I can't go back to this. So I slept in my car or the wrestling room or a friend's house, and I finished school because I just didn't want to go home. I didn't want to be a part of this no more. And, you know, I had – when you go to school and you have these friends, that's truly your family that you spend a lot of time with. And the people you get along with know – the people you go home and stay with, sometimes you don't know as well, you know. And therefore, it's not as close sometimes because you don't do family things. Or you do family things that's a good, normal household. Okay, some parents don't do that stuff. Some people say, here's a video game. Leave me alone, you know. Rather than, hey, let's go on a hike. Hey, let's go camping. Let's go do something this weekend. And I understand that. So my childhood was not as bad as some. It was just my own story.
Yeah.
And you know, and just was is what it was. And so I end up continuing. I didn't drop out of high school. My high school wrestling coach was also a very big influence on me. His name is Coach Jim Grayless. I still talk to him every day. My uncle did pass away last year, and I talk to my coach every day. And he helped me write my book. Like I said, Prime, my first book, which is also a learning process. Trying to become a good writer is something I've been trying to do. And tell my story to kids or business people who have, you know, stumbled in life or stumbled in business. And, you know, it's okay to fail, but quitting is not acceptable. You'll never get there by quitting. And just keep a chin up, keep an attitude, you know? And I like to try to tell somebody to try to think negative when they have a smile. You can't, you know, so try to keep a smile going, you know, and always look up.
Cool.
So, and then, you know, once I graduated high school, I was a state champ. I was honorable mention all-state running back, and then also qualified for state in track. Mm-hmm. So athletics was my way out. You know, I didn't mind academics. I just wasn't mentored towards that. And back in those days, it was more of a, you know, if you're not looking to go to college, or, you know, you didn't have parents that went to college, the academics weren't so important. So if you had parents that went to college, they push academics. Okay. Sure. Mine didn't even graduate high school. So it was, you know, whatever kind of thing. Yeah. So
now let me pause you for a second here. There's just a couple of things I want to unpack a little bit. As you talk about your childhood, you know, we see the abuse cycle, we see the poverty cycle, and very few people get out of that cycle. Now, you did, and you've already identified a few of the reasons. One is good mentors, whether it be your uncle or your coach, and your group of friends. But a lot of kids either don't have those mentors or don't have the best friends. What would be your advice to kids that maybe aren't, you know, don't have a great backstory, that they're struggling and they want to get out of that cycle? What advice would you give to those kids?
Yeah, it's okay to be alone sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's all about your thought process. So sometimes you just haven't found the right people who are going to be your, and again, it talks in my book about your prime real estate. Mm-hmm. Talking about your prime in life. Your prime real estate is that circle around you that you have nothing but influences in your life that are positive. Okay? So that's your prime real estate. Now, if you want to live in the ghetto, then you let people in there that basically don't work or don't job or swear or things like that that aren't good influences. Then that's a ghetto prime real estate. It's not prime real estate. People that you want in the influence, and it takes time.
Right.
You don't have to rush to have good friends because sometimes that doesn't work out. You know, so being alone is okay. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, it gives you the opportunity to figure things out on your own and, you know, just certainly figure out what direction you want to go. And then eventually you'll run into people with similar goals and activities that you like to do. And it just happens that way. It's an algorithm.
Right.
So if you just stay true to yourself and not be influenced by other people, you will find people who will be just like you and support you. And so if you be patient and do that, which it took me a long time to figure that out, because, you know, I was very reckless going through college and being an athlete, but it took me a long time to figure that out. And so my kids, of course, I teach them this, and sure enough, it does work. So it's about, you know, they say birds of a feather, you know, kind of a thing. Well, yeah. No, you don't want to hang out with chickens when you want to be an eagle. Okay. And an eagle soaring doesn't care what chickens say on the ground. So, and there's less eagles in the air because, you know, so you want to go look for those exceptional people. Again, they don't have to be a millionaire or a professional athlete, but somebody that is like you, that understands you. And once you get that way, then you can start doing more self-development things. And once you're able to talk to just about anybody, you know, but your true friends, you know, true friends, that's the ones you have in your prime circle. You know, too many people, it just never really works. Your four or five great mentors, friends, and you know, resources. That, you know, for me, it's my minister, my coach, my girlfriend, you know, my kids, you know, people who are right there I can trust, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like the advice that it's okay to be alone or, you know, as you're trying to attract those eagles around you and have that prime real estate, that's sometimes easier said than done. I remember being in junior high and my friends were going one direction and I was going another and I was lonely and I hated it, you know, but eventually, like you said, if you try to be involved in good things and attract the right people, then you find those people who are going to be a positive influence. So I think that's fantastic advice. Let's talk. So from high school, you're a state champion wrestler, you're off to college. And then, you know, by 96, you're competing at a very high level and become a professional fighter. How did that come about? How did you decide to become a professional fighter?
It was actually by chance. I've been married once in my life, and it was in 1997. And you know, I went to college. I enjoyed college. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't for me.
Right.
I was always broke. I needed to work. Then couldn't afford college, and then so. But wherever I went to college, I would end up, you know, their star wrestler, their star running back. And so I was always a starter because I was always training. I was always bigger, faster, stronger. That was, you know, and so I was always an exceptional athlete. But it just wasn't for me, you know. So I had higher goals, you know. So I always set my standards higher. And there's nothing wrong with someone who has a 9-to-5 job that said, you know, I wanted to do things while I was on this planet that sometimes nobody ever did, you know, or people didn't think I would do. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to stand out. So in order to do that, you got to work harder and do crazier things, as in go for it, you know, don't hold back. Don't be afraid. Just go for it. What's the worst that can happen? Fail. You fail what you learn. Okay. Come back better, stronger, faster. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to college for 3 years. And I went to three different colleges. and I just didn't like either one. I went to Potomac State Junior College in Kaiser, West Virginia for my freshman year. Outstanding running back. Didn't have a wrestling program. My sophomore year, I went to Findlay College in Findlay, Ohio, which is a football college. They also had an okay wrestling program. So I went there, loved it. Starting running back, the running back that was actually drafted sixth round, I outrushed him every game. And, you know, we were in a wishbone. So, you know, every time they key on him, they give me the ball, and I, you know, was a standout. Wrestling, I did great. I actually met a girl in college. My first love, I guess. She was a minister's daughter. Very quick into our romance and our relationship. She died of leukemia, and it was during wrestling season, so I kind of left college. Took about a year and a half off. Was very reckless. I was, you know, in Cleveland. I was a big, strong dude, you know, so I'd hang out with all the guys from the gym. And, you know, we'd get in fights. We'd cause problems. But it was, you know, wasn't like I'd go just hurt anybody, you know. It just, I always seem to get these people that want to start a fight with me. Well, when you're a good wrestler and not afraid to get hit, that's probably not a good idea, okay? So, to me, you know, it's not about hitting somebody, but can you take a punch? I didn't mind, you know. So, I wasn't afraid. My coach from high school saw me going in the wrong direction and said, you know, you need to go challenge yourself again. You do something to you know, you're an athlete. You want to be an athlete. So I'm like, okay, you know, who's going to take me now? I couldn't go anywhere. I was out of school, getting older. I had 2 years of eligibility left. So I really wanted to test my skills. So I did. And I always trained. So I trained. And I started looking into schools and looking for funding. So, you know, I always think outside the box. Okay. So, you know, can't get money. Okay. I still have a college loan out there, so I'm not going to get on a loan. How can I go to college? So I had looked into black colleges, and I got a minority scholarship. So I went to Langston University in Langston, Oklahoma, and I was one of their starting running backs at an all-black college. So I was very fast. I ran a 4.440 and 210 pounds. I was pretty good size. But, you know, it was a lot of adversity because I'm the only white guy on a team, you know, but I actually loved it, you know. To me, it's all people. It's not about skin color. It's about people, you know. If people treat you good, it doesn't matter what skin color they are. Just because you grow up when people treat you bad, now you just want people to treat you good, and then those are your friends. And the other people that treat you bad, just stay away from. Well, that's where I started learning, like, it's all about people. You know, how do these people treat you, regardless of what everybody else says about you? You know, and so I have a lot of friends, a lot of African-American. I shouldn't say African-American. They're black, you know. And the other day I'm working out with four big football players here, and the one guy says to me, he goes, man, if you're prejudiced, I don't know. You got more black friends than I do. So it was just kind of funny. But yeah. To me, it's because we're in Minneapolis. There's a lot going on here, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, like I said, it's about people, you know, and just treating people like people. And if they treat you bad, then stay away from them. If they're not someone you want to put in your prime real estate, then stay away from them, you know. I think it's pretty simple. So I did very well there. And, you know, I just I met a girl, you know, and didn't want to date her. She chased me and chased me. Very pretty black girl. And so finally we ended up being together. Had my oldest son. And when she was pregnant, I decided to go to work and, you know, try to support this kid instead of chasing my dream a little bit here. So I put my dreams in the back burner. Mm-hmm. And went to work and working in gyms and stuff like that. So I decided to, you know, get into business for myself. So I've been in several businesses, some really good, some not so good. But again, you never learn how to be good unless you fail at it, okay? I mean, even Donald Trump failed filed bankruptcy 7 times. Look at him now, he's the president of the United States. But, you know, it's about constantly learning, getting around better business people, smarter people, and making yourself better. So I'm in Ohio, doing real well. And then she didn't want to marry me. She wanted to stay in Oklahoma with my son. So I saw them as much as possible. And so then I ran into an old friend of mine that was a state champ as well. Mark Coleman, Mark the Hammer Coleman from UFC. And, you know, we started training together and my itch for wrestling came back. So I was making a lot of money at the time, a lot of money. And back in 1988, 1999, right around there, because 2001 is when I decided to get rid of my business and go full in for the 1996 Olympics. So 91 is when I got rid of my business. I said I'm going to train for 5 years and go for trying to make the Olympic team. Right. Now, that's a big dream. I haven't wrestled in 10 years, 5, 6, you know, something like that, 8 years, whatever it was. And I haven't been on the mat, you know, so I got my butt kicked. I knew I was going to walk in to the Ohio State wrestling room and get my butt kicked every day. And I didn't miss a day. Hmm. And so after a couple of years of training and just bruised and banged up, and because these guys are tough. College wrestlers are tough guys, you know. And Mark Coleman, of course, is already an Olympian. Now, here's a guy I beat in high school who's now an Olympian. So to me, it's like going, God, what did I do to myself, right? I could have done this. No, that's not. Things happen exactly the way they should happen, you know. And so that's what I accept and say, okay, I'm just going to do the best I can and focus on me, which I did. Things turned out pretty good, you know. In 1997, you know, I had left after 96 trials, my new wife had left me with my 3-year-old daughter. Okay. Going on 3. She's about 2. So I had to raise my daughter now by myself. So of course my dreams got put aside again. And I started working as a McDonald's manager, dropping my kid off at daycare, picking her up at daycare, bringing her to the gym with me at night, putting her at daycare at the gym, getting my training in, then going home, feeding my kid, cleaning the house, Mr. Mom. So that went on for about 8 months. So I basically begged her to marry me and let's get, you know, let's stay together kind of thing. And, or not divorce me, I mean. So I moved to Minnesota, gave up, again, all my dreams and moved here. Was a 9-to-5 guy, didn't wrestle no more because I was never home because I was training. So, you know, I gave up my dreams again. And so the UFC was on TV. And a lot of my buddies were jumping on the UFC wagon. Mm-hmm. And so Dan the Beast Severin, Mark Coleman, all these guys were getting into the UFC. I'm like going, man, those guys just made $100,000. And I go, that guy that just fought right there, I beat him every day in practice. He just made $50,000. So all of a sudden she goes, oh, you can make that much money? And like, you know, why don't you do it? Like, you just kind of go, you don't want me training like that. So here I am being a 9-to-5 guy, right? So needless to say, my first tournament I was in, okay, it was about 3 weeks into training with these guys. And here in Minnesota, the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy, now called the Academy, is one of the most famous MMA schools in the world. I was their first UFC fighter. When I was training, all they had was carpet. They didn't have mats. Ripped up Muay Thai bags. That was it. So Greg Nelson, the owner, had a couple fighters and jiu-jitsu guys, mostly Muay Thai fighters. So I came in and started training with these guys. And the guy that was training for this tournament blew his knee out. So they asked if I'd step in and do it. So I stepped in. My first fight was against one of the most experienced fighters in the world, Travis Fulton. He had like 22 wins and 3 losses. And here I am. 0-0, okay, in a no-rules fight. This is one of those bare knuckles, headbutts, no mouthpiece, no cups. It was totally brutality, okay? So my first fight was 1 hour and 10 minutes long, no rounds. straight, no stops. I'm on top of this guy the entire time, headbutting him till he quit. Okay. Now, back then, there was 8-man tournaments. So I had to fight again in 30 minutes. So I had to fight this big cop from New York that was a third-degree black belt in judo who was about 280 pounds. I mean, now, when I started this, I was coming out of wrestling. So I was only about 205, 210 pounds. So I wasn't very big when I first started fighting. And so I'm in the heavyweight division, small, short, and these guys got a reach on me and experience. So that one went about 23 minutes, ended up winning that one. Then in the finals, which was about 30 minutes later, I fought a runner-up national champion from Iowa. I just did the same thing there too. I just, you know, took him down and stayed on top of him, just kept headbutting him, punching him. And about 25 minutes into that, he ends up tapping out. So in 3 hours, I fought for 2 hours, you know, and it was, I couldn't even, my head was so swollen, I couldn't get a hat on my head. That's how bad, how many times I headbutted these guys. Okay. So all I kept thinking was, you know, at this time, my wife just left me with a daughter, and I was willing to do whatever I had to do for that cash. You can put anybody in front of me, I was not going to quit. Okay.
Right.
But those are the things where you find out who you are. You know, what is your why? You know, why am I doing this? You know, and so that was my first world title fight, my tournament, and my first paycheck. And then from there, I won 2 other tournaments. For the Extreme Challenge and for the International Fighting Championships. Both of those were 4-man tournaments, and I won both of those for 2 more world titles. So a total of 3. Then I was 11-0, and then the UFC started calling me. And I had my first fight in UFC Japan on Christmas Eve in 1997. So January 25th, 26th, 20. It was 25th here, 26th there, and I had my first fight in Japan on worldwide pay-per-view, and I was winning the entire fight, and then got caught in an armbar in the last 10 seconds. So, you know, that was my first loss, so I had to go back and regroup a little bit, so I did, and, you know, the rest just kind of took off from there. I just, all of a sudden, now I was on the world stage. As a world-class athlete on worldwide pay-per-view, and my name's out there, and now everybody wanted to book me, you know. So I took some time off. I really hit the weights hard and grew, got really big and very muscular. And as you see in this book right here, you know, I was in pretty good shape. And so my next UFC appearance, I said I'm going to make a real – big impact. I trained with some great boxing coaches, and I did. I came out and have one of the greatest knockouts in UFC history. And I, from there, my career took a turn. The UFC wouldn't sign me. I was one of the top ranked heavyweights in the world, and just had a great knockout, and they would not offer me an extended contract. Mm-hmm. So Japan was offering me an 8-fight deal for over $1 million. So, and then I had a cartoon deal over there. So Japan kind of took me where I made money, but I wasn't really happy because the UFC was really where I wanted to be. Like most guys want to be in the UFC. Right. That's where you get your notoriety. But I went there because I had a daughter to raise, and that's what paid my bills. So you do what you do, you know? I did that for a while, ended up getting very sick, and had to go through that for about 3 years. I was going through treatment, chemo, blood transfusions, infusions, and so, you know, my life just kept taking a turn. So they said, I'd never fight again. You're never going to fight again, you know. I fought back from that. Got in great shape again, was scheduled to fight in October of 2008. And while I was training, I had an ultralight plane, little ultralight plane, you know, and I crashed. And when I crashed, like, you know, the engine's above you up here and the wings are above you, you're sitting like a go-kart, right? Well, I didn't do a pre-flight check. I was emotional that day. And, you know, my ex and I had an argument about my daughter and blah, blah, blah. So I came out, just took it out, didn't do a pre-flight check and took it up. And about 90 feet, which is nine stories, I had engine failure. And I came straight down. So when I landed, I pulled up and hit flat. The stabilizer bar, which are aluminum, like, tent rods. They're aluminum hollow tent rods, like, very light. Mm-hmm. The engine stabilizer snapped and went right through me and impaled me. When the prop came down, went through the nose cone, almost chopped off my left leg. So I'm sitting there with a rod through my belly and my leg almost chopped off. I had to crawl out of this thing to get life flighted. So that took a year to recover from. During that process, you know, I was also, I owned a couple Snap Fitnesses during my fighting career. I was building my Snap Fitnesses. They were growing all over the place. And I just bought a new home, had a Corvette collection. You know, things financially were going good between, you know, all this stuff. And, being down for a year, I lost everything. Lost everything. End up in jail. And was homeless. After doing 7 months in jail and losing everything, I got out and I was homeless. I had two gym bags and a bike getting out. So then that's 2011, January 1st, is when I decided to restart my life again with nothing and build it back up. So while I was in there, I thought I'd put pen to paper and really start coming up with some great ideas. And educated myself. I was reading all the time, which I found was very good for you. You know, not only therapeutic, but, you know, just good for you motivational-wise.
Right.
So I invented the combo hitter while I was in jail. And, I mean, I wasn't in prison. It was a workhouse. I mean, you wear your clothes, you watch TV, you know, you get to eat whatever you want. This is, you know, like a country club for, you know, people who really didn't have crazy crimes, okay? So, but I was reckless through my years as a fighter and just didn't change my mindset to be as responsible as I should. So combo hitter started, you know, took me, you know, about a year of developing it. Then a company called Zebra Mats, which back then was one of the largest MMA supply companies in the world, they bought it from me. And I took that money and I opened up my first juice bar in LA Fitness and ended up with 10 juice bars in 3 years. Was doing extremely well. You know, was making a million a year and with all of my juice bars. And, you know, it's hard work, though. It's 16, 17 hours a day. You leave at 5 a.m., you get home at 10 p.m. You know, sleep 4 hours, get back to work. Every day, it's a grind, you know. So my older daughter, the one I raised, she was my partner. We did it every day. So it was great. Zebra Mats didn't bring my combo hitter to the market. So they either had to pay me a lot of money or give it back to me, which they chose to give it back to me. So now I'm sitting on a baby that I invented, this invention of mine that I really believed in. So I sold all my juice bars, and I invested over $900,000 into the development of the combo hitter. And so now I have combo hitters, you know, over 5,000 sold and all over the world. And I donate a lot. You know, the concept's really solid. The combo hitter is, you know, a low impact boxing apparatus. It's very safe for anybody. You can throw functional punches from any combination, uppercuts and hooks. So it was one of those things where, you know, light bulb came on. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was funny because you think back of certain things in your life that trigger memories. And I was always creative like this when I was on the wrestling team. And my coach says, you should invent something. I go, everything's already been invented. What can I invent? Right? So it's funny because I was always a creative thinker like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just funny what certain things happen that trigger memories. Like that being said, like I thought at one point I couldn't invent something. Mm-hmm. And here I went ahead and did it. Then it led to more inventions. It led to more different fitness products that are in the industry right now that I engineered, that I have sold off to other companies that I engineered, that it's like, you know, and I'm just, you know, an old knucklehead fighter that, you know, just likes to think about things, you know? Yeah. So it's, if you're like that, I wasn't a very talkative person in high school either, or college. I kept to myself, just did my thing. I had a couple buddies, you know, but, you know, but once you start developing yourself and, you know, you know that maybe your story could help somebody, and, or, you know, like working with kids or business people, you know, to me, I just love mentoring other people because I was mentored to where I'm at today. I didn't get here alone, you know? And so that's the other thing about, you know, if you're at the top of the mountain and you're by yourself, you're just a hiker. You know, a leader has people with them. So you got to bring people up with you if you want to be a leader. And, you know, not everybody believes what I believe, but I respect that. But, you know, if people really want to do something they want to do, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, don't knock them for it. So, and then, you know, since I wrote the book, I've had other businesses that I've started as well that are very successful now. And that goes into my second book that I'm going to talk about, which has just been fantastic. The whole COVID experience for me was a blessing. Hmm. You know, for some people, it's like, oh, you know, it was a blessing for me because I got to really develop some of the things I needed to develop. And then almost went bankrupt again because of COVID. But it is what it is. You know, it's like sometimes you have to sacrifice things you want in your life for some of the things you think you need, right. You know. And so the wants and needs are some things that you have to really understand. What do you want? What do you need? You know, and so what makes you happy? You know, if you can do what makes you happy and you're successful, well, then you're successful. You don't have to be a bazillionaire to be successful. Those people there, you know, I mean, yeah, it's nice to have a lot of money if you are enjoying it, you know? You know, kids today, I think is, you know, it's a different growing up than we grew up in, especially me. I'm a little older than you. And we didn't have cell phones, you know, we had to go knock on their door to see if they're home, you know?
Right.
You know, there was no texting. There was no, you know, and let alone the computer Zoom thing. I mean, if we wanted to talk like this, you know, it'd be face to face, you know?
Right. Of course.
So this is the computer and technology is really gives kids today the opportunity that they sometimes take for granted. You know, to start a business at any age right now and do things, become famous. It's so easy to become famous these days. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You have a solid YouTube channel, you get 1 million followers. You can make a lot of money doing that. YouTube will pay you a lot of money. And again, I've mentored people through this, but you got to put the work in. I want to do this. Well, then let's do it. Well, I don't know how to. Let's find out how to do it. I don't have the time to do it. Well, then you don't want to do it.
Right.
Okay. You know, people do what they want to do. You want to do that, then you do it. Okay. And, you know, a dream is just a dream without a plan. You got to plan it. See it through, hold yourself accountable, have a daily checklist, a weekly checklist, okay? And one of my biggest quotes that I always tell people is, my goals are simple. You start something, then you finish it. That's it. You got to, anybody can start something. Finishing it is how you get there.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap on this, Brad. Thank you so much for coming on today and share. Well, loved hearing your story and your advice. I mean, sprinkled throughout your life story, there were so many nuggets that we were able to pull out on how to be successful, whether it's in sports or in business. And so I really appreciate your time.
And yeah, and this is $4 on Amazon. All the proceeds go to Parkinson's. Kids seem to enjoy it because, again, you know, getting through some of those tough times growing up, you know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, read a book.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Hey, well, thank you so much for your time.
Hope
I didn't talk too much.
No, fantastic. And we'll link the book in the description on this video. So if you want to check that out, you can just follow the description. Thank you so much, Brad.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Virtual School Assembly. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to virtual assemblies. And leave us a rating and review so we know what you learned and took away from this virtual assembly. Videos and show notes are found at virtualschoolassembly.com. And if you're a school leader and you're looking for a speaker for virtual or traditional in-school assemblies, or if you're looking for some teacher training, I'd love to connect with you to see how I can help. You can check out my website at tylerchristensen.com. Thanks. You are super duper. Let's go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.